This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, after much prodding, the State Department back in March, you might remember this, declared that what ISIS was doing in parts of the Middle East was, in fact, genocide. But what has come from that declaration? New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith is here in just a moment with the answer. Yesterday, we had Congressman Jim Jordan on talking about the alleged pay-to-play scheme Hillary Clinton was running as Secretary of State. Well, according to a new book by Judicial Watch's Tom Fenton, the corruption of this administration, well, it's as common as fried chicken at a Baptist picnic. Tom is here to talk about his new book, Clean House, Exposing Our Government's Secrets and Lies. And has the genuine pursuit of knowledge been replaced on college campuses with the zealous protection of liberal dogma? Notre Dame student journalist Kate Hardiman explains a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can, as always, find out more about today's guest. Also, there is information about the upcoming Values Voter Summit. That's right around the corner, September 9th, 10th, and 11th here, or actually in Washington, D.C. I'm broadcasting from Louisiana this week. But you can be a part of it. There's still room, but you got to hurry. TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over to the Values Voter Summit. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. We talked a lot about this the first of the year. It was in March. The House voted to characterize ISIS's barbaric violence against Christians and other religious minorities as genocide. It met the definition from the United Nations. Well, a few days later, or actually right in the middle of that, the Secretary of State John Kerry announced he agreed with the House's assessment and officially declared ISIS's atrocities as genocide. Now, the genocide designation brings with it certain moral and legal obligations to prevent and punish these types of activities. But is our government doing that? What have we seen out of this administration since declaring what ISIS was engaged in as genocide? Well, joining me to discuss that question and more on this story is Representative Chris Smith. He is one of the co-sponsors of the resolution that the House passed back in March declaring these atrocities as genocide. Congressman Smith also serves as a really, I would have to say, the point person on many of these issues when it comes to religious freedom, persecution of Christians and other religious minorities, and, of course, the issue of the sanctity of human life. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you very much for having me on.
Appreciate it. Hey, I would have to assume that you're disappointed that we've not seen more out of the administration once making this declaration.
Without a doubt, the President, I mean, have you heard? I certainly haven't. The President himself addressed the genocide against the Christians and the Yazidis, which has been systematic. It violates the UN Genocide Convention, which we are a signatory to. I mean, people are being targeted. Christians are being targeted. Christian women are being raped simply because they are Christians and they're being told they must renounce Christ or they die or they are horrifically abused. This is the modus operandi of ISIS. It is happening elsewhere, but it certainly is happening in a concentrated form in Syria and in parts of Iraq. And frankly, Tony, we have not even prioritized rescuing Christians who are in dire straits. I have asked repeatedly, and I've had six hearings on this issue, in whole or in part, including one in September of 2014, genocidal attacks against Christians and other religious minorities in Syria and Iraq. And I've asked the pointed questions, in addition to what are we doing to protect, what are we doing to provide refuge, designating Christians as a priority to get to safe havens like the United States. And we have a mere handful of Christians who are a part of the refugee flow coming out of that part of the world. It is unconscionable.
So there really has been no discernible difference post this declaration than what it was before.
I haven't seen a measurable, really any kind of discernible difference. I mean, for years, at hearings, letters, I mean, we had in our omnibus appropriations bill of last year language that set the deadline for the president to make a determination. Then we had a sense of the Congress resolution that passed during the week right before that deadline was to be met. And a statement was made by Secretary of State Curry. We all welcomed it. But, you know, the proof is in the implementation, not in the rhetoric. And I have not seen any measurable change. And again, we could see it, if they were so inclined, in the refugee flow area, in the provision of humanitarian aid. I know for a fact, and at several of my hearings, witnesses have said that the Christians who have made it to places of safe haven, relatively speaking, of course, like Erbil, they're not getting the humanitarian aid that goes normally through UN and other channels, because it goes to refugee camps where the Christians aren't residing, and that includes in Lebanon, because they're unwelcomed there. So there needs to be an aggressive, you know, way to figure out, and it's not all that hard, to get it to the faith-based organizations, including Catholic and other Christian denominations, who are on the ground doing this work. And they're getting their money from private sector donations, but not from the public sector. And I have asked that question repeatedly. I have not gotten an answer. I'm planning another hearing in September to again ask those questions, to push hard for it, but it's not happening.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, my guest, discussing the lack of action from the Obama administration as it pertains to the religious minorities, Christians, Yazidis, and others who are being targeted by ISIS in parts of the Middle East for extermination. Now, Chris, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Was this simply to, on the part of the administration, to deflect because Congress was pushing hard? They had passed the resolution. It was bipartisan. And so Kerry makes this statement just to kind of let to kind of get the heat off of them, but they've done nothing.
My gut and my heart tells me that's exactly what's happened. I do believe within the hearts of some people at state, there is a concern for the Christians. You know, I would never dismiss that. Rabbi Saperstein, the ambassador at large, cares deeply for the Christian
he's actually
minority.
He's
but in
given
the actual implementation of policy, whether it be refugee positions and allowing people to come to the United States, or the provision of humanitarian aid and others, we're just not seeing the Christians being singled out. Genocide is a very serious declaration, and we're not seeing that happen.
Right. I want to add Rabbi Saperstein. I actually do think, given what he has to work with in this administration, has done.
Get the other phone.
He's done a really good job in focusing on this this issue, and I think he's genuine in his concern.
Too. But you know, he's one voice, and he's an effective one in terms of articulating the problem. So when it really does come to, you know, the policy, and that includes,
Chris, did I lose you?
Hello?
Yep, go ahead, Chris. I can still hear you.
I'm sorry, Tony. I lost you.
Yep.
You know, there's just a profound disconnect, and the Christians are left to fend for themselves.
Well, the one positive thing that has come from the declaration, although it certainly should come with more, but just that declaration has allowed more NGOs, non-government organizations, to do more, and it has raised the level of awareness among the American public. And as a result, you see organizations like you mentioned, Catholic Charities, Samaritan's Purse.
I agree fully.
Others.
But, you know, even the Convention Against Torture, the Human Rights Council, you know, when a declaration of genocide is made by Congress, and in this case by Secretary Kerry, that needs to be followed up on. And there needs to be, you know, an aggressive attempt using those treaty bodies to, and, you know, the implementation bodies to raise these issues. And it's just not there.
So you're hearing that you're going to hold hearings in when Congress returns after Labor Day. What will be the focus of those hearings? Kristen. Yeah, Chris, you still there?
I'm losing you again, Tony. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I was asking the focus of your hearings after Labor Day.
Yes, it'll be focused, and some of it will be repetitive from questions asked before. Like, why are we not prioritizing, and there is a designation in our refugee law called P2, these Christians and the Yazidis who have been singled out for such horrible mistreatment? Bring them here. These, you know, I believe they need to be vetted, but this isn't, there's no jihadists among genuine Christians, and you know, they are in great need of rescue.
Have you had any discussions with the Trump campaign about this? Because I know he's touched more
personally
on
the... No, I do hope others have, but I have not. It's a good idea. You know, I'm never one for making these things political issues, but maybe to some extent they should be. There's been a lackadaisical attitude. You know, my first hearings on this were in 2013, that's 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was calling and had hearings and got a bill passed in the House for a Syrian war crimes tribunal, similar to what we had in Yugoslavia and Rwanda,
right.
And Sierra Leone, and they worked. And that hasn't happened. You know, it was never embraced. So, you know, that would have been a great way of trying to raise these issues, hold people to account. You know, it doesn't mean it all ends, all the bloodletting doesn't end overnight, but at least there's accountability.
Right, absolutely. Chris Smith, as always, thanks so much for being with us, and I appreciate all that you do in Congress, tracking this issue, staying on top of it, and bringing greater
Thank
awareness.
You, and, you know, Tony, just for the record, I just got back from Juba in South Sudan and met with Salva Kiir, the president, and others pushing hard on a zero-tolerance policy on rape and sexual assault. The faith-based community is fighting extremely hard for the humanitarian aid because there's about 5 million people at risk of starvation. And it was a very, you know, contentious, but I think a very effective trip that I just got back.
Well, again, appreciate all that you do as it pertains to freedom, religious freedom, and, of course, the sanctity of human life. Congressman Smith, good to be with you.
Thank you, Tony, very much.
All right. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. Really, he does. This is like his issue. And so when I want to talk about it, I go to Chris and, of course, work with him a lot on the Hill as it pertains to religious freedom around the globe. And I think it is important that we keep a focus on this. I know there's many, many issues in the air. I mean, it's like, you know, where do you start? But we've got to give attention to all of them. We cannot afford to allow religious freedom around the world to be lost. And again, we've talked about this. I haven't talked about it lately. But the focus we put on this issue sends a strong message to the terrorists and the tyrants abroad. And it's important that it is a fundamental priority in our foreign policy. All right. Up against the break, you hear the music. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Tom Fenton of Judicial Watch. This might surprise you. Corruption in the Obama administration? Well, Tom's written a new book. It came out yesterday, and he's here to talk about it when we come back from this break. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
We'll be right back. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
Freedom is an amazing gift from God, and He's given us an incredible number of heroes charged with the job of protecting it. I'm Eric Horner, and I'd like to invite you to be a part of doing something really special for those who've answered freedom's call. On Saturday, September 17th, Operation Tankful of Love, in partnership with American Family Radio, will again be working to bless the men and women serving at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, with a gift of some free gas. It's a great way to say thank you to our soldiers for all they do. We'll be serving around 1,800 soldiers that day, and we need your help to make it happen. If you'd like to be a part of Operation Tankful of Love 2016, you can give us a call at 877-968-3742 to make your tax-deductible donation. That number again is 877-968-3742. You can also donate online by going to www.tankfuloflove.com. Won't you join us in being the hands and feet of Jesus to those who serve?
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. The Twitter, at T Perkins. All right. By the way, we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to talk a little later. Donald Trump making a trip to Mexico, kind of an unplanned trip. And a new poll out. A ABC News Washington Post poll released today. We're going to talk about that. But first, you know, scandal is nothing new for our government officials, certainly not in this administration. We have Hillary Clinton and all these emails coming up where it looks like she was engaged in this pay-to-play scheme when she was Secretary of State. Of course, they have her and Bill Clinton have a long and storied past when it comes to being accused of government corruption, dating all the way back to their days in Arkansas politics. But a new book, Clean House, exposing our government secrets and lies, covers all the scandals related to President Obama's second term in office. It's a new book out, actually just came out yesterday, and it's by the president of Judicial Watch, Tom Fenton, and he joins us now. Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you. How are you?
Good, good. And what is this, about 1,000 pages?
You name which batch of documents. It's just crazy. We're getting thousands of pages of records. Just over the last two batches themselves were about 2,000 total, and they show the foundation getting favors from the Clinton administration, the then Clinton State Department, for well-connected donors and big donors, including the Crown Prince of Bahrain and a shady foreign billionaire.
So are you doing an addendum to your book?
Well, you know, this is the type of book, if I were to add in something every time a new document came in, it'd be, the never-ending story.
I mean, there really is a lot of material covering this administration when it comes to, either corrupt or
questionable. Yeah, I mean, we can't do enough. We've had well over 300 Freedom of Information Act lawsuits. We recount many of them and how, especially on the topics of the IRS and the Clinton emails and Benghazi and things like that in the book. But we can't do enough. I mean, the government's spending trillions of dollars a year, and oversight in Washington is in a state of collapse. But for independent groups like Judicial Watch going to court to try to get access to key government documents.
Now, you mentioned some. What are some of the other scandals that you cover in your new book, Clean House, Exposing Our Government Secrets and Lies?
Well, we talk about, the big issues, that have happened since 2012. The Benghazi terrorist attack. Pretty much every important thing we know about Benghazi is because of our independent investigation, not what Congress is doing, but what Judicial Watch is doing.
Right.
And,
which is let me just say, Tom, Judicial Watch has uncovered the bulk of this information that has led to congressional hearings. Congress hasn't been able to get this information, and you guys have.
Yeah, that's the incredible thing. The Select Committee on Benghazi was created in direct response to a revelation we uncovered through our Freedom of Information Act lawsuit about the White House involvement in the big lies on Benghazi. And that was a document that five congressional committees hadn't been able to get. And then Speaker Boehner had had enough of the Clinton obstruction or Obama obstruction and ordered the Select Committee. I mean, that's how significant our work has been. It's remarkable we're doing it. We're happy to do it, but it really is outrageous that we're the ones doing it.
Now, how prominent does Hillary Clinton factor into these various scandals that we've seen in the second term of Barack Obama? I mean, as you've gone back and uncovered a lot of this.
Well, Barack Obama is probably regretting her appointment. Or maybe he's happy to have the scandals going on because it distracts people from what he's doing in terms of overturning the rule of law as he prepares to leave office. But Mrs. Clinton's at the center of the storm on Benghazi. And, of course, she upended the Freedom of Information Act by doing all of her government work on a separate email system that wasn't subject to the Freedom of Information Act but should have been. And so it's resulted in criminal investigations, pressure on his Justice Department, and just revelations after revelations, it seems, almost every day at this point about the scandalous behavior related to Mrs. Clinton and her State Department and the shady connections with her foundation and their donors.
I'm talking to Tom Fenton. He is the president of Judicial Watch. He has a new book. It just came out yesterday, Clean House, Exposing Our Government's Secrets and Lies. And a lot of this information, Tom, does come from the Freedom of Information Act request that you have made and the documents that you have obtained. What is your purpose in writing this? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, I want people to know what their government's up to. I mean, we talk about documents that you can find if you look hard enough on our website and elsewhere. But, you know, it's important that there be a book about the key documents that we uncovered on scandals that are important and will always be important in terms of what is our government up to? You know, the abandonment of our troops in Benghazi and our people in Benghazi. The abuse of the IRS to assault the First Amendment rights and suppress an entire political movement to make sure that President Obama was reelected. The crisis on immigration, you know, that issue isn't going away. We've got these key documents. And not only that, we provide the background about this, about these scandals, so that you know what to look for as we go forward. And importantly, you know, towards the end of the book, we talk about what ought to be done to help clean up Washington. That isn't that reforms that can be made to clean house, no matter who's elected.
Extremely, extremely critical, because I think we have reached a new level of corruption and tolerance of corruption. And that's what concerns me most, is that people tolerate it. We cannot tolerate it. Tom, how can folks get a copy of your book?
Well, it's available all over the country for purchase on all the major bookseller sites and your local bookstores. So go to our website at judicialwatch.org to get direct links. But it's widely available. It's already a bestseller, so we're thrilled by the public response.
Great. Super. Tom Fenton, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck with the book.
Thank you, Tony, and good luck to you as well.
All right. Tom Fenton with Judicial Watch, president of Judicial Watch. New book out, Clean House, Exposing Our Government Secrets and Lies. Let me just say, what, Tom's a great ally in this fight for conservatism. Judicial Watch does great work. We work with them extensively trying to uncover certain documents as it pertains to questionable activities of our government. All right, speaking of questionable activities, we're going to go back to the college campus. When we return, Kate Hardiman From Notre Dame, a student journalist joins us with the latest shocking story from a college campus. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
One of the things I talk about often is copper, and we watch copper to see how the global economy's outlook is going. Copper, a good indication of things starting to pick up globally, particularly in China. Remember, China's manufacturing makes up about 38% of GDP globally, and copper is something to watch. It's watched around the world as an indicator. Well, one thing that is happening in copper, first of all, it's down 1.2% on the year as most industrial metals are seeing double-digit gains. Copper, since July 13th, is down 6.2%. Why is that? It's not necessarily because the economy is getting even worse globally. It's more to do with the fact that production has just overproduced, and we are seeing mounting stockpiles of copper in warehouses across the world. So one of the largest copper producers in the world, coming out of Chile, is cutting production 5% in hopes of cutting back on some of those inventories. So if you see copper start to go up, it's not necessarily because the economy is getting better or looking better. It's primarily going to be because inventories hopefully are going to start coming down and get more normalized. The other issue right now, the Eurozone inflation. You know, the Eurozone has thrown everything they possibly can at inflation, including negative interest rates, which also have failed miserably by the central banks. And inflation for the month of August, flat. No rise, no increase in inflation. So I guess they're going to look to launch more stimulus measures. I don't know how much more they can do, but they're not going to have much choice.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Welcome back. The website, tonyperkins.com. Let me remind you that Washington Watch is listener-supported. We're here because of you. Folks like you across the country that partner with the Family Research Council make this program possible. We receive no government money, none whatsoever. If you'd like to partner with us and be a part of supporting the work of the Family Research Council and Washington Watch, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. All right, earlier this week, we discussed an incident at Clemson University where a praying man was told he would have to fill out authorization to a form for authorization to fit to pray in a non-free speech zone. Of course, if you, there's only these certain places that you have the freedom to pray and speak. Well, now a story out of Colorado Springs where professors at Colorado University have told students if they don't agree with the science of global warming, they need not take the class. Whatever happened about convincing students with the facts? Well, here now to fill us in on this latest incident of intolerance on the college campus is Kate Hardiman, a student journalist at Notre Dame. Kate, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Pretty shocking here. Tell our listeners about this story you've written about.
Sure. So we received an email passed along to us from a student in this course called Medical Humanities in the Digital Age. And essentially this email said exactly what you just paraphrased, that if the students in the course don't subscribe to this belief that the professors hold, essentially this so-called 98% consensus that they cite, that if the students don't subscribe to this, then the course is essentially closed to them and they have no place in it.
Now, this particular course is about the issue of climate change, global warming, however you want to phrase it. But they're saying basically the science is settled. 98% of scientists agree with it. And if you don't agree with him, you need not take this class. I mean, whatever happened with the idea of having to prove these claims to be true, that if you don't agree with it, you simply have to, well, there's no room for you.
Right. I think there's a lot of questions raised here about academic freedom and the ideal of free discourse and debate at our nation's universities. And this episode really calls into question if the professors are indeed upholding this standard. And also, the other thing that comes to my mind is if they're so sure that this consensus exists, Why would they be afraid of
right.
a few students questioning it?
See, that's what that, I mean, and we see this not just on this issue of global warming, but we see it on a variety of issues that are central to the liberal or progressive agenda, is that it's beyond debate. They don't even want to discuss it. And my view of that is because they don't have the facts to back it up. They cannot defend it. I mean, I have no problem with people wanting to argue the opposite view that I hold. I mean, I think you lay out the facts. We're all entitled to our own opinion, but we're not all entitled to our own set of facts. And I think that's their issue, is they want to protect their opinions, not the facts.
Right. I think you're absolutely right in saying that. And also, it's ironic that this so-called 98% consensus has actually been questioned on a lot of fronts. There was a series of articles in National Review Online back in 2015 that actually sought to debunk the myth of this consensus, and there's been a lot of controversy surrounding it. So the fact that they just blatantly lay that out in an email is really problematic.
So, Kate, what happened with the students? Did they stay in the class, or what took place?
You know, I'm actually not sure. We just got the email a few days ago, so we really just tried to turn the story around as quickly as possible. But we will be following up with the students to see. And obviously, the student who submitted the article in the interest of protecting his or her name declined to write it. So that's when it kind of fell to me.
So what about the university? Have they responded at all?
Yes, they did. So the professors, the three professors co-teaching, and the course is online, just to clarify, the three
right.
professors co-teaching the online course didn't respond to my inquiries for comment, but the university spokesman did. And essentially he said that this course is one of the options of many that students can take to fulfill this sort of general humanities requirement. So he essentially seemed to be supporting the professor's view that if the students didn't feel at home in this course, then they should feel free to pursue other options. He didn't come out and say it as explicitly as the professors did in their email,
right?
But he did seem to suggest that.
Well, I mean, I can understand someone stating at the front, look, you might not like what you hear in this because this is our view, but to say no other view will be tolerated, and if you hold that view, you're not welcome in the class. I mean, that does not sound like something that should be happening on a university campus.
Yeah, I think universities are definitely, or they should be, the place where students are able to challenge ideas and really debate with one another, because if we all go in with our settled preconceived notions, then what are we really accomplishing at university? And how
True.
Are we to grow from those opportunities?
Right. I think it's all about protecting that liberal dogma. Kate Hardiman, thanks so much for joining us. Great article, very insightful, and we'll check back with you to see what comes of it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Kate Hardiman, she is a student journalist at Notre Dame University. I mean, look, this unbelievable what is happening on college campuses today. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little more, and we're going to take your phone calls. I want to talk about a new poll out today between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Also, I was just mentioning Donald Trump in Mexico, going down there to meet with the president. We'll talk about that and your phone calls here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. We're coming back with more, lots more, right after this.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
You can stay up to date with the latest in the culture war from the news team at onenewsnow.com. Read the stories of the day and watch timely videos. Our goal is to present the day's news from a biblical perspective. OneNewsNow.com not only features the latest breaking stories from across the U.S. and around the world, but also news of the challenges that Christians face today. Bookmark OneNewsNow.com.
Forget watching the presidential race. Come to Washington, D.C. and experience it. From September 9th through 11th, Donald Trump and other conservatives will be teaming up with FRC Action and thousands of Americans to bring real change to Washington. You can too. You'll be hearing from leading voices like Dr. James Dobson, John Voight, Bill Bennett, Phil Robertson, Alan West, Oliver North, FRC President Tony Perkins, and many more. If you're frustrated by how Washington's spending your money and undermining your values, this is the place to be. You'll learn how to transform your state on issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, judges, and radical Islam. Registration is only $119 for adults, and scholarships are available for students. The November elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. Tickets are going fast, so log on to valuesvotersummit.org today. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. I had to play that. That was given. Someone sent that to me. Actually, a Hispanic lady who is supporting Donald Trump and wanted me to get that to the campaign. But I listened to it and I just had to play. There's more, but I wanted to play that for you. It's interesting. As it's anecdotal because I know the polls don't show this, but as I have seen, to use the phrase, Hispanic Americans, many of them are supportive of Donald Trump. But there was an ABC News Washington Post poll that was released today. And what it shows is 59% of registered voters have an unfavorable opinion of Hillary Clinton. That's shifted. It's about a 7% increase, 7 percentage point increase in the last 3 weeks. And driven primarily because of the news stories out about her emails. Now, 59% unfavorable, but the same poll shows 60% of voters, basically identical, have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump. That's an amazing thing. Two people who gained their party's nominations have very high negatives. Now, Clinton's unfavorable numbers are pronounced in some of her core support groups, like women. 52% of women have an unfavorable opinion. And that's, I would say politically, that's deadly. Postgraduates, 51%. Hispanics, 40% have a negative opinion of Hillary Clinton. Even liberals. Now, that's hard to believe. Now, her worst favorability, obviously, among Republicans, 88%, conservatives, 73%, white men, 72%, whites overall, 68%, and independents, 66%. Now, that is a significant number, 66% of independents. That's those voters that are not affiliated with either party, often portrayed as being moderate or liberal, when in fact they're just not affiliated with a party, and sometimes they're very conservative. I mean, that they can take in the whole viewpoint. But anyway, her number's not doing too well. But Donald Trump down in Mexico, kind of he's going to do a big speech tonight on immigration. It took a little detour down into to Mexico to meet with the president down there, getting a lot of criticism for it. But this is one thing I have to give him and his campaign. And they've been a little bold, and I think you're seeing this with Kellyanne Conway, who's a friend, Steve Bannon, also a friend. As they have taken kind of control of the party, they're doing things that are, I mean, not the party, I'm sorry, the campaign. They are, I think they're having a party, but they take, they're taking some bold moves, thinking out of the box. For instance, his trip down here to Louisiana. When I called and talked to them, said, hey, this would be good for him, be good for us, bringing the much-needed attention. They said, well, okay, we'll do it. And in fact, it did. It helped showed him in a presidential light, also showed the lack of leadership from the current administration. And I think it's, and I know this to be the case because I've had conversations, that they're seeing this as a kind of a model, and that's why these last-minute trips like he went to Mexico, and I think it's going to be seen as favorable. I mean, I think it's very important to have conversations with those who disagree with you. It's just what we were just talking about just a few moments ago on the college campus. Increasingly, liberals do not want to have the conversation. They don't want, certainly don't want the debate, but they don't even want to talk. And they don't want other people to even have the right to talk. And for, you know, Donald Trump to go to a place that has heavily criticized him because of his immigration policies and other things he has said, I think it shows a lot. And I think he's going to get, I think it's going to benefit him, quite frankly. But what do you think? Do you think that was a wise move on Donald Trump's part to take a little detour, go down to Mexico and meet with the president down there? I know the president had invited him to come, and so he has gone down there to meet with him and discuss issues that are of mutual concern between our two countries. And then tonight he's going to give a major speech on immigration. But anyway, what do you think? Good move, bad move? 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. What do you think about Donald Trump heading to Mexico this afternoon to meet with the president down there? Is it going to help him on the issue of your relations with Hispanic voters? You know, what was he trying to accomplish? Again, I think it shows courage. I think it shows thinking outside the box. And I just don't think it's going to be beneficial for him. I mean, you can disagree, and I know this from when I was in office. And look, I don't hide my views, and I am very passionate about what I believe. And I pursue, you know, the facts. I argue the facts, and I will be very aggressive in doing so. But I could disagree with people. And have that discussion and you know, walk away and go sit down and have a cup of coffee. And it made the process so much easier when you can aggressively defend and advance your ideas. But at the same time, you realize that, you know, at the end of the day, we're all people, all right? And we got to work together, got to live together. 866-372-7234. We're going to go to Texas where Rebecca is on the line. Rebecca, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a Hispanic female. I live in Texas. My dad was Mexican, and I'm married to a Caucasian male. I think that Donald Trump should have already been to Mexico to discuss this, especially we see it over here. I have a unique position because I have tenants, and I have about 350 of them. And the majority of the tenants that I have are Hispanic. They're good, hardworking people. But at the same time, you see the flip side of it where, just a little story, a girl walks into my office and she said, I want you to go get my phone back from my mother. And I said, excuse me? She goes, well, the state, you know, welfare gave me a phone, and I want you to go get it from my mother because she has it. Well, I know her mother. Her mother's sickly, And I told her, I said, I'm not going to go get that phone. I paid for it. And she said, what? I said, I paid for it with my tax dollars. You need to get a job and work like everyone else does and stop working or living off the government. I'm tired of paying for all these kids. I love families. I come from a family. I'm very much, you know, God-centered in our home. But where did the morals go that we have to get up and work every day? And I see too many people taking advantage of the welfare system that are not even from the state.
Right.
I'm all for helping people. I'm all for that. That's what this country was made on.
So you think Trump should have gone there earlier, but do you think it was a good move that he went there today?
I do think it was a great move that he went there, because the reality of it is that, you know, we have people that are out of jobs, and then you have people that think they're too good for the manual job.
Right.
You know, something's going to have to be done.
So let me ask you this question. So I have you on the line. You're a female Hispanic by your own admission. So what do you think about Donald Trump as a presidential candidate?
I think he would be great for a presidential candidate. For him personally, not so much. I'm kind of curious about what his viewpoint is on women now that he's in this race. But what do we have to go on? Do we have someone that we can't trust that we're going to put into office because, you know, she's shooting emails everywhere? We don't need that. We know that he's a good businessman. Has he used the system for his business? Well, who doesn't as a businessman? So we can't even look at him on that point of view. Yeah. All I know is that he can't be worse than what we have, and it's sad that, you know, he's the lesser of the two, but I'm willing to gamble on him than I am to go backwards another 10 feet.
Understood. I think you're not, well, I know you're not alone, Rebecca. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your thoughts on this. I actually appreciate you calling in to get that perspective. Thanks so much, Rebecca. 866-372-7234. A lot of opinions on this because the phone lines are stacking up here. The calls are stacking up. Let's go to West Virginia where James is on the line. James, welcome to Washington Watch.
Now, how you doing today, Tony?
I am quite well. Thank you very much. How are you?
Me too as well. As far as the question goes, obviously the question of the day, I think it was a good move for him to go there today or any time, really, because I think for someone in his position, and I know liberal media is showing him really, really slacking in the polls, I think this is going to show minorities that he doesn't have a problem with legal immigration. He doesn't have a problem with immigrants as a whole, as they're generalizing to do. But I think this kind of shows a lot of people who are on the fence, especially in the Hispanic community, that he is willing to work with another country to resolve the issue. And if he hits on issues like border control and making sure, which they don't have a problem, I've heard, I don't know if it's this president of Mexico or previous president that doesn't have a problem with enforcing their immigration laws as far as someone coming south across the border. But from south to north, but if someone's going, you know, wanting to sneak across as what's going on, they don't have a problem with it at all. But
right.
I think it shows some courage. I think it shows some strength. I think it shows him trying to be presidential, to go there and be willing to meet with the president of Mexico and, you know, just maybe discuss the issues that to kind of clarify some things. I hope that's what happened.
Yeah. I agree with you, James. I think you're absolutely right. I think to go into a situation where you know it is not, it's not like they're rolling out the red carpet for you. They don't, you know, as the media has portrayed, and he has helped himself, helped this portrayal of his views. I mean, I don't agree with him on a lot of things. But the fact that he would go into a place that I would have to describe it as, yeah, I mean, politically hostile. I mean, it's not a friendly place given the differing viewpoints that the president of Mexico and he has. So I agree with you, James. I think it's shows courage, boldness going into a tough environment to sit down and have a conversation. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much, James. 866-372-7234. All right, we're going to try to get to a couple more of these phone calls here. Let's go to Oklahoma, where Linda is on the line. Linda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead.
All right. I think it was a good thing that he went to Mexico. The thing that I have recognized is it seems like they're bashing him for not being so presidential, but he's not presidential material. He is a businessman. And frankly, I think that's what my country needs right now, is somebody that can turn this around. And he's the type of manager who listens. He surrounds himself by people that are expert in different areas that represent the all of the stakeholders. I like that about him. You know, I wouldn't have voted for him if I'd had a chance, you know, if a choice. But I will vote for him over Hillary Clinton any day, and I think he's smart in going to Mexico.
All right.
And I think he's smart in changing his mind when he listens to the people around him.
And I agree with you on that, Linda. I see that that has been the case on a number of occasions, and I've made that same point myself, that, you know, it's okay to change your mind if you change it the right direction. And he has done that. He's made some policy decisions or statements, and only to be advised that that was not so good. And he goes back and he changes. So it's, I mean, people criticize him for changing his viewpoints. But if he is changing because he had the wrong view, I mean, why be critical of that? I just think that there's people that just, especially in the media, that want to criticize every move that he makes, which is really fascinating to me, because you look back and the media really puffed him up a lot in the primary. And they did this. They're very good about doing this. They did this John McCain back in 2008 in the primary. Oh, they loved him. I mean, he was the greatest thing. And even, in fact, back before that, I guess it was in 2000. I mean, they loved him. He was great. But then in the general election in 2008, I mean, it just hammered him. And they're doing the same thing now to Trump. And, of course, they didn't give him a free pass in the primary, but they sure gave him a lot of coverage, knocking out many of the other candidates, and now they're just focusing on attacking him. I think it was a good move on his part to go to Mexico, and I think these going into difficult circumstances and listening and doing what a president should do is important. I mean, if you... You know, it's, you know, they used to say if you act like it long enough, you'll become it. And so if you start doing things that look presidential, you have a greater propensity to become president, especially when you're running as a nominee. So I think it was a great move on his part. All right, folks, almost out of time. Not going to get to the rest of the calls. Too late in the program. I want to thank you for calling in, though, and being a part of Washington Watch. And Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow night. And I hope you will as well. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Resources there for you. Also, as I mentioned yesterday, if you want to keep up with the flood relief effort in Louisiana, there's a link at TonyPerkins.com to follow over to our church, GreenwillSprings.com. Thanks so much for being with us, folks. I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.